Okay, so as always, so start off closing your eyes and start off by just feeling your body, making sure you're at ease, that you're relaxed, that the body doesn't have any pains. All of these things are going to stop you from enjoying your meditation practice. And just become aware of your body, feel your body, feel any place where it isn't just at ease or relaxed. And if there is any place it's not at ease or relaxed, if there is a tightness or tension anywhere, make sure that you relax that before you do anything else. Take a few deep breaths and allow any tension just to relax and dissipate. Please make sure that your body is at ease throughout the meditation. If at any point during the meditation you find there is a lack of ease, And just go back to the beginning again. And ease the body. Take a few deep breaths. Change your posture. Do whatever is required to feel the sense of ease again. Without that ease of the body, it is very hard to move forward in meditation. And as you allow your body to relax, you should be able to notice that the body fades into the background. It becomes irrelevant. You feel at ease. You feel good. If that is what is happening, you know you're going in the right direction. And when the body starts to fade into the background, the mind comes into focus. And the mind, the focus on the mind at this stage, is simply to allow things to be like a passive observer, not to judge, not to say what is right or wrong, not to think that thinking is bad or thinking is right or whatever, but just to observe whatever is going on, passively, without judgment. Please remember at this stage just to be a passive observer. It's as if you're just standing back from experience, as if there is a distance from you and everything else that is going on. And the clue to being passive is to accept everything which is happening. Just acceptance. No right, no wrong. Acceptance of whatever is going on. Then you should be able, after a while, just to stand back and just allow things to be. And hopefully you will notice that as you just observe completely passively here, you will notice that this helps you in allowing things to calm down, and you start gradually to feel more peaceful inside. And to help that sense of peace along here, and try to put yourself into the right attitude, the right mood, by thinking in a way which gives rise to some positive perception. And one of the great ways of doing that is to just feel the beauty of the peace. And allow yourself to reflect very briefly on how wonderful it is to be without all the ordinary burdens of life, the house, the work, the family, whatever it is, all that is taken away. And all you have now is to feel the peace in the mind, feel the beautiful sense of having no burdens whatsoever, just feeling peace right here and now. Wow, what a wonderful thing that is. when your mind feels ready, when you feel really relaxed and at ease, you can just very gently rest your attention on the breath. And you know that the mind is ready when this is very easy, very natural, without any force, and it happens pretty much all by itself. And just allow that attention to rest on the breath, and allow it to stay with the breath. And if the attention falls away, just wait until it becomes natural again to place the attention back on the breath. No force, just a sense of ease and ease and ease all the way through. Okay. Anybody have any questions or comments or anything? Yeah. Everybody happy? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Christina. Okay, so there's a few questions here from overseas. Okay, so first, nobody here has any questions? Everybody happy? Yeah? Everybody really happy? Okay, good. Okay, so these are the questions from overseas. There's a question from Vicky in Indonesia. And she is asking, when we are at the jhana stage, how will insight come? Does insight come automatically, or should I recollect the Dhamma when I am in jhana? Okay. Well, basically, I think one of the things that people often don't understand is that it takes a lot of insight even to get to the jhana stage. The jhana stage, sometimes people think that jhana is like a samadhi practice, and that insight is something completely different from samadhi, but it isn't. It takes an enormous amount of insight to get into deep samadhi, like the jhana states. And the way you can understand that is that insight basically means your ability to let go of things, right? The more insight you have, the more ability you have to let go. Why? Because insight means understanding suffering, non-self suffering and impermanence, but especially suffering in this particular context. It means understanding suffering. When you understand suffering, you can let go because you don't want to hold on to things which are suffering, right? So because of that, deep samadhi always comes with insight, because deep samadhi means the ability to let go. You can only get to samadhi by letting go. So if you are already at the jhana stages, well, it means that you already have incredible amount of insight. There's a very famous verse in the Dhammapada which says that there is no jhana for one who without wisdom. There's no wisdom for that one without jhana, but one who has both is in the presence of nibbana. In other words, if you already have the jhana stages, you have enormous amount of insight and wisdom. It comes with the territory, it's part of the package. It's impossible to have one without the other. The point, rather, is that if you get to the jhana stages, then you are ready pretty much for enlightenment, right? That's how profound these stages are. Yeah. So, just keep on doing the right thing. If you feel that you have the jhana status, maybe the time is to come to do a meditation retreat at Jhana Grove or something, and then you can speak with a very competent jhana meditator like Ajahn Brahm, for example, how to take it further. But if you are there, that's wonderful. But don't think that there is no insight, even though you have jhana. If you have jhana, there's a tremendous amount of insight already there. Okay. Question number two. This is from Stefano in Italy. Should we have passive non-judgmental awareness of whatever comes to mind, or have mindfulness with a gatekeeper which directs the awareness and allows only wholesome states in? Ajahn Brahm writes about the importance of a gatekeeper. So how is this compatible with non-judgmental awareness of whatever that comes in? Okay. So the idea of having a gatekeeper is basically, it's almost like slightly more advanced stage of meditation. First of all, you just need to relax, you need the mind to become at ease. And only when you have a fairly strong mindfulness, only at that point can you really have a gatekeeper. A gatekeeper is someone who has a very clear, has a lot of clarity about what is happening in the mind, right? When you see what's going on in the mind, and you can see that in kind of an unwholesome state is about to arise, you're about to get upset about something, you're about to have some sort of desire about something, you can see it happening, and because you can see it happening, you can redirect your attention straight away. You see that you're about to get upset with a person, you think about what somebody did to you today, and straight away you can redirect your attention to a metta object, a friendly object instead. That already takes quite a bit of mindfulness, right? So often initially in the meditation practice, you just learn to be non-judgmental first of all, to relax. And then when the mindfulness improves, then you can have more of the gatekeeper thing. So it depends on where you're at in your meditation. It depends on how how good your mindfulness basically is. For many people, they tend to boss their mind around far too much and to control too much. And it's that controlling which often is a hindrance in the beginning. So you need to control less. And then when you control less and you're just observing, then you can use the gatekeeper idea, because then you have enough mindfulness to be able to do that. So please judge for yourself. Please know your own mind and try to figure out what works for you. In the end, that's the right way of thinking about these things. So try to, whatever works for you is the way to go. Yes, Chris?
Yeah. With regard to the gatekeeper, doesn't Ajahn Brahm talk about the gatekeeper by way of aditana? In other words, if you're in deep meditation, you don't want to be messing around cognitively and talking to yourself, because it's going to mess things up.
Yeah.
My understanding is that the gatekeeper is something that's made by way of an aditana at the beginning of meditation, and then you just forget about it. And that then flicks in and kicks in automatically as a gatekeeper function in deep meditation. It's not done cognitively in deep meditation. Can you correct me if I've got that wrong, please?
Yeah, I think that's basically right. Basically, it just happens fairly automatically, because you know that these are unwholesome states, and you know, as you say, you have an aditana, but the aditana is not something you really have to make very, prominent when you start out, because you know that these things are unwholesome already. So as soon as you see them, because of your general practice beforehand, you know you will tend to move in a different direction. You see something is happening, you know this isn't right, and the mind will just move. So yes, it is not something you do, but the problem is that if you still have unwholesome states arising, it means your meditation isn't that deep anyway, right? So if something is arising which is unwholesome, it isn't that deep. And that's why the gatekeeper is still useful at that particular point. But as you say, it's very automatic, because you see it's happening. Okay, you move, you focus somewhere else, because you know this is the wrong way to go about things. But it takes training, because sometimes you don't know where to focus. Something's happening. Okay, what do I do now, right? How do I focus differently? And very often you need to have that kind of meta-object ready. So, okay, I'm seeing the negative in something, and then you have to be ready to move on to the positive aspect of that experience instead. And that can only happen with training sometimes. Otherwise, the upset comes, and you don't know how to change your focus at that point.
Inherent in what you're saying there is, at that point you're describing, you just don't know. That's when the kilesa of doubt arises, huh? It's like that's a doubt thing, that's what does you in deep meditation is doubt.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that does you in big time in deep meditation.
Doubt, yeah.
Not knowing, should I go this way, should I go that way?
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. So I think what how the Buddha explains these things as well, we have it in the Vitakka Santana Sutta, where he says that, if some unwholesome mind states arises, you use what he calls substitution. Straight away, you go to the positive thing of something instead. You get a negative perception of a person, but straight away you go to the positive perception of that person instead. But to be able to do that, you have to have that kind of bank of perception available to you. You can actually move to the positive perception, right? So that is what you, yeah. Okay. Okay, the last question here is from Esther in Darwin. A friend who is holding on to his painful past experience has turned to womanizing and alcohol to forget. He has asked me to help him, so I have tried to take him to our temple in Darwin, but he doesn't want to go. Okay, how can I help him? that's a good question. Usually the best way to help somebody is just to be kind to them, right? Be nice to them, be kind. Don't try to make them see things differently. Don't try to force them this way or one way. Just be kind to them. Be gentle, be understanding, be there. And when they feel that somebody is understanding and gentle and kind towards them, often they will be able to resolve the problem on their own. The most powerful way to resolve your problems is always to do it by yourself. Because when you do it by yourself, you really believe in it, right? You actually see, oh yes, I should be doing this. If you do it because of some external agent, then often it doesn't go very deep, and it's not a real profound change that happens. But when you see it for yourself, and you want to change because of you understand that you're going down the wrong way, then it will actually happen. So the best thing is just to be kind. And then one day you might feel, now is the right time to suggest something, right? Now I can feel that he's open to some advice or something. You say, oh, listen to this talk here. I got a nice talk for you. You might find this really helpful. And then you offer him that opportunity when the time is right. So you have to feel, sometimes you have to feel your way through these things. What feels like the right time. Don't pressure. If you pressure, it will be counteractive. People become defensive. They won't be willing to listen anymore. Most important thing you can do is just to be kind. Then that hopefully will work out in the long run. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything? Everybody happy? Yeah? Okay, so let's pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.